But made it. I get there. I go upstairs, and I'm neurotic as hell when I was bodybuilding. I had three scales with me. Because y'all want to check all three, so I'll take the average. I'm not going to trust just one scale. So I get there. I checked my weight into my 201.4, 201.4, right? But, like, at this point, like, I'm diuretic up. I haven't drink or eat anything. Nothing. Depleted. I'm just emaciated, right? So I'm like, crap, I'm going to go do the sauna. Went down to the sauna, and I told my mom, I go, Mom, what I'm doing is not good for me at all, okay? I'm going into the sauna. I'm coming in and out every 10 minutes. If you don't hear from me every 10 minutes, you can send somebody in after me, okay? And she goes, okay. And she's looking at me like, she's like, think of my mom, like a mom standpoint. My son's crazy.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear with coaches Skip Hill, Andrew Berry. I'm Scott McNally, and we are joined by Chris Tuttle. Chris, thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. Andrew and I go way, way back.
Hell yeah. We're excited for this one. Guys, all of our programming, it's brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. Use our code THINK for additional savings. High quality, third-party tested supplements from a company that you can trust. SupplementSource.ca for our Canadians. They have great deals that change week to week. Check them out. And last but not least, thank you to everybody from Patreon. We're going to do another Q&A episode after this, and we'll be sure to tackle all your Patreon questions. So from here, I'm going to turn things on over to Andrew, and Andrew's going to run the show.
I guess I'm running the show.
You got the wheel, man.
I got the wheel. Yep. So Chris and I are both from the New England area. You know, obviously I'm the better known bodybuilder out of the two of us. Way more successful. Obviously. But yeah, right. But no, getting to the point of it, I wanted to hear, because I've always thought I always thought it was interesting, Chris's story. Chris comes from a nutritional background. He's a registered dietitian. You know, he became an IFBB pro, 212 pro. He's got a lot of fun stories from along the way. So I think we just want to start it off with, like, what got you into bodybuilding? What got you into it? Were you an athlete before all this? I know the answer to that, but I think our listeners would find it interesting.
Yeah, I'll try to keep it very, a very shortened synopsis of the story, because it's a pretty long story, but I loved dirt bikes as a kid, my fifth birthday is when my first dirt bike started racing when I was eight. And I loved motocross. I loved dirt bikes. And, I was also younger, diagnosed with hypoglycemia. So this is kind of how nutrition ties in and how all of a sudden exercise is going to tie in. So I got diagnosed with hypoglycemia, and I noticed at a year young age the differences in how I felt with certain foods and others. My friends might be eating like combos and like a Yoo-Hoo, and like I would eat that and I would feel terrible.
Yeah.
But if I ate a sandwich and say some chips, I would feel way better. So I used to always say that I needed real food. So when I was a kid, I'd always say to my parents, I need real food. And that meant more food supplements, obviously, was, you know, like a more higher fat, protein, carbs in each solid meal. So I paid attention to food and how it made me feel, and I would choose it based on that. So that's how my initial interest started happening with food. So fast forward to first starting racing motocross, I got killed, crushed the first year of racing. And just like most people who start anything, they're not very good. And I hired a trainer. My parents hired a trainer for me, and my trainer just overhauled everything. He's like, dude, if you want to be good, like, you got to act, you got to do what top guys do. And that's nutrition, that's training, that's riding, doing bad conditions, do everything. So he revamped my diet and taught me education with what's a protein, what's a carb, what's a fat around the age of 11, and kind of transformed my already diet that was better than most kids' diets into more, you would say, just a balanced diet, right? Meat, protein, carbs, fruits, vegetables, just balanced. And then I felt really good. He also put me in a weight training program that was more conducive, you could say, like a CrossFit, where in motocross, you have to have a lot of endurance. You can't be too muscular, or else you pump up in fatigue. So it was like, you know, sets of 20 deadlifts and then do walking lunges and then do a bunch of push-ups and then, you know, do bent over barbell rows, kind of like a huge circuit. And they just like really just push yourself cardiovascular-wise, but under resistance training. And my body responded very quickly. And I didn't notice it. My friends noticed it. They're like, dude, total, you're jacked. In sixth grade, they're like, dude, you got abs, bro. What's up with that? And then like, then I started to associate, wow, what I'm doing for training for motocross is changing the way I look. I'm getting attention from it. I'm like, this is kind of cool. So then I start picking up magazines, bodybuilding magazines, etc. And I'm like, oh, that's really cool. Like, I could change my training and maybe even look more like that. But my motocross trainer wasn't having it. He's like, dude, you can't do that. That's like trying to be a sumo wrestler and run a fast marathon. Like, it's not going to happen, not going to work. So I used to sneak in things here and there, but he would know because he would see me ride and my arms would pump up and I'd get too tired. And he'd be like, dude, stop training arms. Stop. I'd be at the track, 13, 14 years old, fairly muscular. And people would look at me like, dude, you just come from the gym? They used to make a joke. And I'm like, I didn't. But like, obviously, I liked the attention. I liked how it made me feel. I liked the muscles. I like how I have control of my body. So that's like the initial introduction to nutrition and training and what it could do for my body. But it was all for motocross at the time. I raced motocross all the way from about age 9, 10, got really serious into when I was 11, 12, and I turned professional as 21. And then when I finished racing motocross, I wanted to bodybuild so bad because now that I'm done motocross, I can actually bodybuild. I was going to school at the time to be a strength coach. And then I quickly realized that I really wasn't interested in all this different philosophies of training because it was more geared towards sports. And I wanted to be more towards bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. And as you guys know, a lot of the funding and the research is about athleticism because that's what pays, right? Football, track and field, Olympic sports, but not hypertrophy. So I changed my major to nutrition. And that's when I became schools to be a dietitian. And I knew that was going to help my bodybuilding as well. And I'm also like, well, I love food. And I'm the only guy really in the whole nutrition field. So it's better to be around a bunch of girls and talk about food, right?
I can attest to that. Like, I was the only guy in my graduating major that year because I have the same degrees.
I had some guy one time try to bust my balls. He's like, bro, you're a dietitian? Like, yeah. Like, isn't that like a female field? And I look at him and I go, yeah. Females, I talk about food. This is wonderful, but that's not the real reason. Females, but it was food. And I bodybuilt and competed all through school. Left motocross behind. I was ready to leave just because, like, you're living in your mom's basement, spending like $40,000 a year on racing, breaking a bone every year, going through all that. I'm like, dude, I got to grow up eventually. But I was like, oh, bodybuilding's perfect for that. Like, I don't have to break bones. I only have to train like an hour and a half a day. I love food and I learn about food and I can transform my body so I can dedicate all this time and effort to this. And of course, it coincides with my career as well, nutrition. And that's kind of like how bodybuilding started in 2005. I hired my sister's ex-boyfriend who used to bodybuild and he helped me prep for my first show. Didn't do very well. Got fifth out of six people in the middleweight. Probably was like 5 weeks out conditioned to today's standards. And the following year, I was like, I'm going to do this myself, but I'm going to learn. I bought all of Chris Aceto's books, read all his books, followed to the T.
Nice.
And then went from middleweight, fifth place out of six people at my first show to winning the novice overall and second in the open in a stacked light heavyweight division. It was like, I think there's 26 guys in my light heavyweight class.
Mm-hmm. How old were you then?
Crazy.
I was 21, 22, 22. Okay,
22. Win your first overall. Did you say you won the – I'm sorry. I missed that placing. I heard you moved up to light heavyweight. What was that placing in there?
Yeah, this is the back in the day when novice divisions actually had every class because there's so many competitors.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I won the novice overall, and then I got second in the open, and the open had something like 24, 26 guys in the light heavyweight.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Gold Gym Classics in New Jersey. And it was great because, when you're young, you don't know how bodybuilding works. So I had no idea. So like I was out there and they're doing call outs. And then eventually I end up in whatever call out it was. I didn't know what it meant. And then I was like, God, what do you think? My dad's like, I don't know. Like, it looks like you're up there, who knows? And night show comes. And this is where I missed about it. I'm sure you guys can all attest to it. It's like, you're new, you're a fan, you love every minute, you're learning everything, everything's new. And they're like, hey, Chris, so number whatever I was, they're like, you're top five. I'm like, oh my God, I made top five. Your weight class. And this is a crazy division. And they start calling out, and I thought I was like fifth. And they're like, fifth place goes to so-and-so. I'm like, oh my God, I'm not fifth. And they go down the line, and there's me and one other dude. And he's like, Chris Tuttle second. I was so excited. And then the following week, I got second again to Crystal Comte at the East Coast. And after that, you know, I did my prep again, didn't work out. And then I hired Fakhri Mubarak, and then he projected me significantly in a very short period of time. I went from, I think, 15th at Eastern USA's to 6 months later winning Atlantic States heavyweight. So I jumped a weight class in 6 months and then won the Atlantic States.
Jeez. So you jumped a heavyweight from 21 to 22. Yeah.
It was November. Oh, my God, what year was that? It was November that I did Easterns. And then I hired Fakhri shortly after, like 2 weeks after. I first asked him. He said no. Because coaching wasn't a thing then yet, right? You know, I was like, hey, can you help me? He's like, no, dude, sorry. And then like 2 weeks later, he contacted my ex-girlfriend at the time through MySpace and goes, hey, I'm considering helping people with coaching. I will help Chris. And I'm like, great. I think it wasn't very much money. I think it was like $600 for the year or something like that, whatever it was back in the day. And then from that November, I weighed 191 on stage. And then that next June, I was 202 on stage peeled.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it was a crazy good rebound. Everything was better. He made me eat way more food than I ever thought that was possible for that rebound. And a lot of new stimulus. My body just responded great, but it never responded that extreme ever again. I mean, we all have those crazy great growth spurts like once or twice, you know?
Yeah.
And then kind of moved on from there to the next show, to the next show. But you guys have any questions before I keep going? Because I'll just keep going.
I actually have two. Yeah. And I've been waiting patiently. And Scott and Andrew know that that's a very difficult thing.
That's a big deal. It's a big deal.
I haven't said anything. I haven't interrupted. Number one question is, well, it's not even a question. It's more of a statement. So you're not only a pro bodybuilder, but you're also a pro motocross.
Yes.
Okay. I'm not pro anything. So you've already got two. That's number one. Number two is and this is the one I'm really curious about. You got to be honest. I don't know where your wife is, but how much ass were you pulling in like junior high?
He's been sitting on that one for 10 minutes.
I've been sitting on this for a while. Exactly. Because, I mean, none of the other kids had any muscle, right? And I know it's young. I'm making a joke about junior high. But
I won best physique, you know, in the senior year or whatever. But, I mean, to be honest with you, like most women are into like following the football players, the team sports. And I was like, cross guy, you know what I mean?
I know, but that's pretty manly.
I get
what you're saying, because it's not football and they don't get to wear your jersey.
It's not common. I mean, like, I did my fair share, but like motocross, like, it consumes you. Like, people don't realize it. Like, it's just like any sport at a high level. I mean, Sunday you're racing, Monday you're recovering, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday you're practicing, training, you know, biking, running, biking, swimming, hitting the track, working on drills, Saturday's recovery, pack up, race Sunday. And you're doing that, you know, 9 months out of the year. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and then you break bones and then you're hurt. It's a lot at a high level. And even the highest level, those guys are riding like 30 hours of the week on the bike, you know? So it gets to be a lot. And then at that point, like once I turned pro, it's like, I can't compete with these people. Like, because these people are getting things paid for and like, they're able to ride 30 hours a week. I got to work.
Yeah.
And like the level of speed they carry is ridiculous. So like, I remember my first professional race, I did okay locally at a professional race. And then I did an invitational, which is basically qualifying for nationals for a national professional race. I didn't qualify, but the how fast they were going, I couldn't even believe it. Like I was going as fast as I ever have been in my life. And they're just pulling away from me like I'm standing still. And I'm just like, this is where I branch off to do something else now. They're like 17 years old. Just go, it's gone.
Yeah. That's crazy.
So moving forward, when did you connect with Evan Centipani?
After Atlantic States, actually. I did Atlantic States. He came over to me and he goes, dude, you're Connecticut grown. I go, yeah. And he goes, well, me too. He's like, yeah, I know who you are. I'm like, you're Evan. You're down in the Haven. He's like, yeah. He's like, yeah, man, it was nice to meet you. He's like, I don't know many bodybuilders in here besides PJ. And I'm like, well, I haven't met PJ yet. And then I met PJ there briefly at Atlantic States. Yep. And then the following week after Atlantic States, I attend the Montanari show they put on New Haven. And Evan sees me. And he's like, dude, put on these trunks. You're guest posing with me at the show. And I'm like, bro, like, you know, a lot of kids today would be like, yeah, man, I'm going to do that. Bro, I was like, I have no place to do that. Like, I'm not a professional. Like, I just won my class Atlantic States. Like, I'm a nobody. And he's like, dude, I think it'd be great because this Connecticut show, you're still shredded, you know, and you're like 10 pounds, 15 pounds heavier of water. So you look huge. Why don't you come on? And I did. And then when I talked to Evan backstage, he's like, bro, you ever in New Haven? Let's train. And I go, sure. And then year after, I went to college in New Haven and he sees me there. And he's like, dude, Tuttle, what are you doing here? I'm like, well, I'm going to school at University of Haven to be a dietitian and I'm training here between classes. He's like, bro, let's fucking train. And I'm like, sure. Oh, man. Well, let's go. And then we became good friends and training with him for the first time was such an eye-opener. I mean, looking back at it, we know it wasn't a good idea, good practice. But so, for example, the leg day, and obviously when you train with Evan, you just shut up, right? Like, I'm just following what he does. Oh, if he says failure and do 10 more, I'm going to failure doing 10 more, you know?
Yeah.
And we're doing hack squats. He's like, what do you like to do? I'm like, I love hack squats. This is back when I had no injuries. I could do everything. And he's like, I like drop sets. Like, yeah, me too. So we're warming up. We're doing our feeder sets. And I get up to about 6 plates. And then I do a set of 12 and I stop. And he goes, what are you doing? And I go, I'm working my way up to do our drop set. He goes, no, every set is a drop set. And I go, come again? And he goes, I plan on starting at 8 and then I'll do 8 plates for as many as I can and then do 6 plates as many as I can and 4 plates as many as I can. And that's one set. And we're going to do 4 of those.
Dang.
And I was like, in my head, I'm like, you know, like, yeah, I'm still old school mentality. I'm 41. Didn't say a word. Sure. Yep. Let's go. Do the whole thing. I couldn't get out of my car when I got when I left, my legs were in such spasm, I'm surprised I didn't give myself rhabdo.
I was thinking the same thing.
I called my wife at the time. I go, I'm at the grocery store and I physically can't get out of my car. She's like, what do you mean? I'm like, every single time I try to put weight on my leg, my whole entire leg seizes up. So I sat in the car for almost an hour and a half and I kept trying to get out to like to navigate to get my groceries and I couldn't.
Yeah. That's when you get a text from your kidneys and it just says, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What's going on out there?
Back then, texts were 25 cents each time. So it was a very important text.
Yeah, I didn't text back then. I don't even think, oh, did I? We had the flip top phones, right?
Right.
The
T9.
You had
to hit the 7 5 times to get one letter.
And then get mad if you didn't get it right. Yeah.
But I had a flashback with them. It was great. I mean, it was funny because I go to school with my cooler because like I commuted from East Hartford to New Haven, which is 45 minutes. So I would bring my food for the entire day and I would just go to classes 8 a.m. and then 9:30 and then meet Evan after my second class and then go back for my other classes all sweaty and workout pants, walking around with a cooler, smelling like fish, you know, like I did whatever I needed to do to get it done. And I just remember all the teachers always cracking jokes. Oh, what's that? You're an organ donor. You're carrying organs in that car.
That's a good one. I like that. Yeah.
You're literally describing like my same college experience, to a T, Chris.
Eventually, Andrew, it's like eventually I tried to do it to keep a low profile. Like I would keep a main cooler in my car, and then a baby cooler with me one year at a time.
First, the attention is okay, and then it becomes kind of like an eye roll. You're like, just ignore me. Just nobody see me because I don't want to be bothered with it.
Oh, it would annoy the teachers when you break out a Tupperware and you're eating during their class. Like they'd have to make a crack about it every single time. You couldn't get lunch in today, so you had to eat. You know, it was always something like that.
So I go in the back and I try to be a low profile, or I step out. Remember, I had a lab for 4 hours. You can't bring food or drink into the lab. I'm like, okay. And you can't leave to eat either, Chris. I go, okay. So like around 2 hour mark, I'd be like, I have to use the bathroom.
Yep.
And I'd go to the bathroom and I would just like drink a shake of oatmeal, all macadamia nut oil and whey protein, and just get it down, then go back into the class.
Yeah. You know you're disciplined when you can sit down and take a shit and eat a meal at the same time. I know it's gross, but you got to know, like, that's sometimes the price you got to pay.
You know, I hear clients be like, oh, I'm traveling, I'm not going to be able to follow the diet. There's never been a time in my life with any job I've ever had anywhere, even working in the ICU, where I couldn't figure it out.
Right.
It might not be perfect, but I figured it out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, people are like, oh, I'm traveling for the day, I can't do my diet. Oh, are you traveling in an airplane? Oh, no, just a car. What? That's even easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Easiest scenario of all time.
Yeah.
You eat your food cold? I'm like, 90% of the time I do.
One of the common questions we get asked by you guys is, what would you do differently with your bodybuilding if you could go back in time? Given all the experience and education I have today, there's a number of things that I would have done differently. One of them is that I would have started using collagen sooner. Collagen is one of the few supplements that will actually rebuild connective tissue. It took me tearing my supraspinatus in 2021 to get with the program. I use True Nutrition's hydrolyzed beef collagen. I get the unflavored version. I pay for it myself, just like you guys do. I use 20 grams a day, mix it into my coffee. It's totally unflavored. You don't even taste it. Plus, I use 10 grams of their micronized creatine. Creatine has been shown to improve brain health, especially for the aging brain. I need that. And of course, you know, we've always known about the muscle building effects. So this is my morning routine every day, and I'm encouraging you guys to do the same. Use our code THINK for savings. Plus, it's the only way for them to know that this advertising is being heard. Otherwise, they just think you're some random dude that clicked on an ad.
Ain't nothing to it but to do it.
Let me ask you, as far as getting the degree as a registered dietitian, I would assume that you found it, I don't want to say easy, but easier. Not only because it was something that you're interested in, because it fed not only your motocross but your bodybuilding, but also just because you had a pretty good background going in, right?
Honestly, being a dietitian is completely different. So being the dietitian is all about nutrition-related disease and the cases that you're going to experience with people on dialysis, diabetes, gout, things like that. So it really almost doesn't apply at all, other than really kind of making you more well-rounded and understanding what a good diet is and a bad diet. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when you don't have the education, you could easily take information from somebody that's a bad diet and be like, oh, that, I think that's a good diet. You don't know. Yeah. But going to school, I can look at diets and be like, this thing's trash. Regardless if it's getting good results, this is trash, you know?
Yeah.
So it didn't honestly apply to anything. In my master's in nutrition, which was human nutrition, we did a lot of research, and that opened my eyes more to, like, there's nothing that's in stone. It's right. Just what we've proven right now, and this is what the research states. And basically, it opened your mind. It's almost like being a dietitian, an undergrad, closes your mind, puts you in a box. Hmm. Well, this is the rule state. This is the code of ethics. This is what we learn. Then you do your master's, then you're like, there is no box, you know? Yeah. It's wide open, and if it works, it works, and you do what's sustainable for the client. And, you know, this is the current research with cancer and nutrition. This is the current research with alcohol and how it affects the body. Masters is probably overall better education piece that helped me through bodybuilding, looking at plans, being like, this is retarded. This is ridiculous. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But they didn't teach you anything with like advanced sports nutrition. They did a small degree of electrolytes, but even all my rotations were all sick people. It's all very, very sick people.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about the dietetic internship and then your job as a registered dietitian.
Internship, more, so. And even as the job. I work in the oncology floor, ICU, people on tube feeds. It's interesting. You do TBN, like, you do IV nutrition, and you're having to adjust their electrolytes every day. That's cool, you know?
Thinking back to like the actual, you know, registered dietitian degree the dietetics degree in nutrition food science. And on the nutrition food science part, I thought that was way more interesting, especially classes like advanced nutrition, biochemistry. Like that for me had the application to bodybuilding, which was everything that I was about at that point. And a quick story was, I remember one of my professors, and you remember, like, Chris, they have all these guidelines for like how to get people to lose weight or how to do this or that. Right. And one of our final projects was to write a diet that would help someone lose 20 pounds. And I'm like, well, shit, I just did a bodybuilding contest prep and I lost 32 pounds. I'm literally, and I documented everything to a T. I'm going to type it all up and I'm going to, turn it in. I turned it into her and she like gave me a zero. And I'm like, what do you mean a zero? Like, I literally documented the diet that I did. You didn't follow any of the guidelines. You're supposed to have, you know, 65% carbohydrates and 12%
Right. Oh, God.
I'm like, listen, I was already helping people out at that point, not like coaching or anything like that, but helping my friends lose body weight, put on muscle. And I was like, yeah, but in the real world, that just doesn't work. Like show me what that works, you know?
Yeah.
I'm giving you a real life experience of what I did to a T to lose all his body fat. And I even had pictures back then. I took Polaroids and attached them before and after, you know? And she's like, why are you sending me these pictures? You know, it was the weirdest experience, but I'm like, you don't want a real life case study?
Yeah, that's the downfall. And I get a ton of inquiries about people who want to follow a similar path as myself, going through dietitian, getting a job at a hospital, and then eventually working for themselves. And they ask me the pros and cons of being a dietitian. I tell them exactly what you just said. I go, my teachers had no idea how to build muscle, how to manipulate body composition. Like, when I say no idea, I mean, if you follow what they recommended, you're not getting any results.
You know, you're gonna get fat.
Yeah, they don't talk about metabolic adaptation. We talk about metabolic adaptation within people who are like muscle wasting and people who are like severely malnourished, but we don't talk about metabolic adaptation or carb cycling or anything of that nature. And if you tell them that, they look at you like you're ridiculous.
Yeah. So there's not a skip loading chapter in the dietetic. I just want to be clear. This, they're so behind the times. I can't.
Oh, it's like 20 years behind. It really is about 20 years behind. I mean, think about it, right? Just like in medicine, there are doctors that are doing practices today that are working with certain treatments that will be written in medical literature 10 years from now that will be taught in medical school.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're always behind because you always have to have that research to back it before you can put it and publish it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. True.
Yeah.
Well, let's get back to your bodybuilding career. I wanted to talk about the story, you know, that I've heard a couple times about the North Americans where you just got completely overlooked. Tell us about that.
Okay. All right. So after Atlantic States, I did Atlantic States. Steve Weinberger's like, dude, told Falkery that I should do junior nationals a week later. I didn't have any money, didn't have any gear, had nothing left. I'm like, I got to finish school. I got to worry about what I got to worry about. That's fine. We'll do junior nationals the year after. Did the year after, flew 2 weeks out, got ninth, did terrible, and then had a bad breakup, decided to put bodybuilding on hold for a while, really focused on school. And then in 2012, I returned to bodybuilding. And it just for fun. And then I was like, you know what? There's the Vermont is 13 weeks away. I'm going to jump on cycle and start prepping for that and then just do it for fun. And I did it, won the overall in that, and then the Jay Cutler class the week after. And then I said to myself, well, let's just do one pro qualifier and then quit. Because at this point in time, like, I can't keep bodybuilding. I got to move on. Because the girl I was with at the time, she hates bodybuilding, thought I was a selfish SOB, didn't want any part of it.
You dated my wife? God damn, I didn't even know this.
I had to do the gear when she wasn't looking. I had to do cardio before she got up. Tried to tread as lightly as I could, just like we're in school, right?
Yeah.
So I did, you know, did the Cutler, and then I was planning to do USAs, partially tore my pec, delayed to North Americans, and this is my last show, North Americans. Falkery helped me because I helped Falkery a lot. So helped me. Falkery really helped me for this prep. Became a good friend of mine. Prepped it, did great. And I had no idea what I'm walking into. I just know that, like, this is the best I've ever looked. I'm happy. What's going on? This is my last show. No pressure. Excited. Maybe I'll get top 10. Maybe not. Who knows? 4 weeks out, I decided that I didn't want to be a heavyweight. I want to be light heavyweight. And Falkery's like, that's fine. But it might be tough. So a week out, I think I was 213 or 212. So Falkery recommended some things that are a little – I'm not an idiot. And Falkery's not an idiot either in this regard. But this is what he knew to do. And I checked with Evan, and I'm like, I think this is a little extreme. I think maybe we should try to do a gradual drawing out process. So, like, I modified it, you know, stopped growth hormone, stopped injectables, reduced my sodium just a little bit, made sure my water was consistent, carbs were at zero. Then I started 25 milligrams of L-dactone a day, just a little bit, just to see what happened. And my body weight starts to trend down. And I'm like, okay, we're trending down a little bit every day. Maybe we'll do 50 mg of L-dactone, see what happens. I'll give you 50 mg of L-dactone, trend down a little bit more. I think I was around like 209 or 208 Wednesday morning. And then I'm like, man, weigh-ins are Thursday. Now, this is the story. This is a really good story. I was supposed to go with my buddy, my wife who hates bodybuilding, and his wife. They're going to drive me down. So I was in Connecticut. This is Pennsylvania. It's like a six-hour drive. And you know what? You know this. We can't rely on anybody when you're prepping.
No.
Yeah. So I'm starting to get nervous. I'm like, I don't know if this is a good idea. So I call my mom up Wednesday. I'm like, Ma, what are you doing tomorrow? And she goes, well, I'm working. And I'm like, do you think you can take the day off? And she's like, for what? And I'm like, well, this is the thing, Ma. I don't trust my friends being out on time. I have to make weigh-ins immediately upon opening so I can make weight and start to fill up. I have to do drastic crap, Mom, to make weight. And she's like, where is it? And I go, well, it's Pittsburgh. She goes, oh, I like Pittsburgh. I'm like, great. You can go shopping and you go do what you got to do, but we're going to go. But this is the other catch. She's like, what? I'm like, we're leaving at 3:00 in the morning.
Oh.
And she's like, what? I'm like, I'll pick you up. It's not a big deal. So I fly to her house 3:00 in the morning. My mom's a saint. She agrees. She gets in the car and I go, Mom, this is the deal. I go, I'm going to be driving at a rate of speed that you're probably not going to like. Okay. I haven't eaten anything or drinking anything since like yesterday. Today. And I go, just please don't pay attention. And she looks at me and she's like, pulls her newspaper. And she's like, and like, you know, when you're deprived and depleted, things tweak you, right?
Oh, yeah. So
I was playing country music on the way down there. I hate country music, but country music doesn't make you angry, right?
Right.
So I'm playing country music. I got the heat blasting. I'm trying to sweat.
Of course you are. Probably got like two sweatshirts on too, right? Yeah, you're covered up still.
I'm spitting in a cup. And my mom's just like, it's really hot in here. It's really hot in here. Like, Mom, put it on the window. We'll take breaks intermittently.
Yeah.
And then we like pull up to a gas station. I'm like, Mom, this is the deal. I go, I got to check my weight and tend to defockery. And I go, I'm going to run in and check the weight. You start pumping gas. By the time I finish, I'm going to come out, finish pumping gas. You go to the bathroom. I'll turn around, pick you up, and we'll fly. Like very systematic. And she's like, okay. So we do the whole thing. We get down there. We got down there really quick. I think I was there at like, I don't know. I think I made it in like 4 hours and 45 minutes. And I was
What's the normal drive time for that drive for you guys?
It was five. It might be 5.5 or 5.
I thought it was like 6. I thought it's like 6 from Connecticut.
Yeah. I think I shaved 30 minutes off the normal time.
Yeah, yeah.
But made it. I get there. I go upstairs. And I'm neurotic as hell when I was bodybuilding. I had 3 scales with me. Because y'all want to check all 3, so I'll take the average. I'm not going to trust just one scale. So I get there. I checked my weight, and I'm like 201.4, 201.5, right? But like at this point, like I'm diuretic up. I haven't drink or eat anything, nothing, depleted. I'm just emaciated, right? So I'm like, crap, I'm going to go do the sauna. They had a sauna there. I already called to make sure they had a sauna. Went down to the sauna, and I told my mom, I go, Mom, what I'm doing is not good for me at all. Okay. I'm going into the sauna. I'm coming in and out every 10 minutes. If you don't hear from me every 10 minutes, you can send somebody in after me. Okay. And she goes, okay. And she's looking at me like, what? You know? She's like, think about my, like a mom standpoint. Like, my son's crazy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Mom is outside the men's locker room and I'm in there texting my friends, trying to keep my mind occupied. Because you're just not depleted, not dehydrated. Like your brain is just like, you know, you're trying to like cope with how uncomfortable you are. So I go in there 5 minutes, come out, assess, because I know how dangerous this is, right? Like, I don't want to die in the sauna. I'm like an idiot.
Oh, yeah.
Go in there 5 minutes, come out, cool off, pat dry. Go in there 8 minutes, cool off, pat dry. Go in there 10 minutes, cool off, pat dry. Now I'm starting to feel a little woozy. My blood pressure is probably getting a little low. So I come out and I just sit there. And then some guy comes in and he's like, you, Chris? And I go, yeah. And he goes, oh, your mom sent me in here. Are you okay? I'm like, yeah. I'm feeling like, it's been 10 minutes, has it? It's been like 16. So mom found some random dude to come and check me. I was fine. So then I went in for 5 more minutes because at that point, I'm like, I'm at the point where I'm like, okay, this is not good. None of it's good, but I mean, this is really not good.
Yeah.
Come out and I go upstairs and I check my scale and it says 197.
Yes.
Ooh. And I was like, ooh, but what if their scale's heavy? So I get on all my scales. I was like, one was like 197, one was like 195.8, and one was like 199.2. So I go down there, and it was actually an hour before weigh-in started. And I'm just like looking around and the guy's like, can I help you? And I'm like, hey, do you mind if I just jump on that scale right there just to see how close I'm actually to making weight?
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, we don't start weigh-ins for an hour, but yeah, sure. Knock yourself out. I'm like, sweet. So I run over there, take all my stuff off, down the posing trunks, get on there. And I'm like 196.2. And I'm like, yes. And he goes, you know what? I'll just register you now. And I'm like,
oh.
And he's like, yeah, what class are you? I'm like, well, I was registered for heavyweight. It's Chris Tuttle. And then I'm watching the dude. I'm like, watch, take my paper out, cross off heavyweight, write light heavyweight, write my weight, watching him put in the correct pile. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, is that the right pile? He's like, yes. Yeah, and I'm like, okay, turn around. I go, Fockery, all right, how do we undo this?
Yeah.
Well, then it was just like, dude, drink a liter of water right now. Eat, I think it was like 2 cups of rice, 5 ounces of chicken, a little bit of olive oil, and send me pictures every 2 hours. And every meal have, I think it was at the time, 400 mLs of water, 300 mLs of water for the first night. I mean, arguably, North American night show was probably my best look on stage of all time. Not the prejudging because I didn't have tan on. I was still flat. But, it ended up working out. And then, so this gets great. So I haven't competed in a while and I did my own tan. So my buddy helped me with my tan and I did Jan Tana. And this is a professional show, a prestigious show. So who knew? I didn't know how to do spray tan. So Fockery's like, all right, dude, this is the deal, man. You got light, you got bantamweights, you got lightweight, welterweight, middleweight, and then you got some time. I need you to get at least 2 solid meals in before you go on prejudging. So head down there at 8 o'clock. I'm like, okay. Well, apparently there like wasn't any bantamweights. There's like two lightweights, 4 welters. Okay.
Yep.
So 8 o'clock rolls around. I'm eating. 8:11, 8:12. My friend's wife texts my buddy and goes, hey, Chris is light heavyweight, right? And my buddy goes, yeah. He goes, middleweights are just finishing up.
Oh, God.
So I'm start going up. The elevator's stacked. I'm depleted. I can't walk downstairs fast. My legs are going to fucking buckle.
Yeah.
So I'm sidestepping downstairs, all depleted. I'm putting my number on as I'm in my trunks going down the stairs. And my buddy's like leading ahead of me. And I'm like trying to grab my oil or whatever I had. And I run down there. And the guy's like, all right, light heavyweight. My buddy's like, light heavyweight here, light heavyweight here. And the lady goes, light heavyweight, you're done. You missed it. Go home. Forget it. You didn't pay attention. It's already done.
What?
And I'm one of those people that like, I accept the mistakes I made. So I was just like, this sucks. I'm going back to my room. And Jay's like, my best friend at the time, Jason, he's like fighting for me. He's like, no, fuck that. Let him go out with heavyweights at least. Let him go out with heavyweights. Let him go out. And some guy comes flying backstage and goes, Chris Tuttle? I go, yeah. He goes, we need you. You guys are on stage right now.
Yes.
As I'm rolling up on the pool, they've already done the first comparisons. They've already done individual routines. Now they're doing the call outs. So I missed the whole half of it. I had no oil on, no pump up, and a tan that was too light. So I get out there and I'm like, do my thing. And they first call outs finishing, second call outs finishing, third call outs finishing, and then the last group. And then Steve goes 101, switch, puts me right in the middle.
Yeah.
We go through the poses and he goes, number 101, stay on stage, please. And then he calls back out like 11 other guys, but excluding the top three.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get compared and then they put me in the center again and then they file off. And I'm like, well, whatever. It's, I wasn't unhappy. I was like, I made a mistake. It was like, it's whatever. Water under the bridge, moving on. It's my last show. At least, I look great and that's it. So I get all these messages. Bro, why didn't you have tan on? Bro, why didn't you have oil on? Why didn't you have a pump up? And I'm just like, I don't know, explain to 800 people,
Yeah.
But David Bay texted Evan to get my number from Evan, and David Bay sent it to me. He's like, dude, he goes, you belong in the top three, arguably maybe even top two are winning. He goes, you need to come back. You need to fix your tan. You need to fill up a little bit more. You need to get a pump up, put oil on. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. And then Fockery calls me. He's like, dude, Steve said you never have no pump on. You had none of this. What's the deal? I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. So I redid the tan. We went to Liquid Sunrays. Evan knew somebody at Liquid Sunrays, called Liquid Sunrays, and they're like, dude, my buddy needs a tan. Can you help him out? He'll pay whatever. Just make sure it's perfect. So I went to Liquid Sunrays. They told me to rinse off what I had. They sprayed me. I filled up a little bit more. I ended up having like steak and fries, a little more fluid. But the downfall is I had ulcerative colitis during flare-ups, on and off. And I just started to get a flare-up after prejudging. So my stomach started to be a little distended.
And you think you're a little stressed? Were you a little stressed that day, maybe?
Yeah. Like, well, as a bodybuilder, and like we tend to push that aside, and our body kind of ends up paying the toll on that stress.
Right. Yeah.
So I would say just getting that message of like, yo, your class is on like in 5 minutes, and still being upstairs in the hotel room, like that alone would turn my insides inside out.
This whole thing has sounded like, you know how everybody who's competed at some point or another has like a bad dream of like forgetting something, forgetting to shave. That whole thing is like one of those dreams is what I'm hearing right now.
Yeah. I took it well. Like I wasn't stressing. It was more like, how do we get downstairs between point A and B as fast as I can, as efficient as I can. I wasn't worried about like the emotion with it. I was emotionless. It's like, don't tear a quad going down the stairs. Don't tear a quad. Okay, got down the stairs, make it through the crowd without anybody messing up my tan. You know, I'm like, so I was just like one thing at a time until I got to where I needed to be. But anyway, filled back up, go to the night show. Now I look way different. And people backstage are like, yo, dude, you look sick. Oh, your hair looks awesome. You look full. And they tell me I make top five. So I was like, no shit. And then people backstage keep telling me, they're like, I've never seen Steve Weinberger in history ever pull somebody at the last call out and pull them into the first top five ever. Yep. And he goes, I don't know what that's about. He goes, do you know him? I go, I don't. And then he goes, well, he must have made an impression. Huh. So that happened. I ended up getting fifth, and I was going to quit. And David Bay's like, oh, I gotta interview you for post-show wrap-up. I think we're going to talk about what happened and all that. And then in the interview, I was like, oh, this is my last show. I'm done. And he finished the interview and he gets off the interview and he's like, dude, you're not done. He's like, you have to do nationals in 12 weeks. I'm like, no, dude, I'm done. This is it. Like I spent my money. I don't have any gear left. I didn't plan for it. I'm starting a dietitian job. Like I'm done. It's over. And he's like, I could highly consider that. And then sure enough, Fokker is like, Steve Weinberger says you do nationals. And then Evan's been a really good close friend of mine and always a very wise person. So I told Evan my situation. I'm like, dude, this is how I feel. This is what happened. I don't have any gear. I don't have any money to buy gear. I start my new job in like 2 weeks. What do you honestly think I should do? And he's like, dude, you're lean. All you got to do is hold out. You probably need very little gear anyway to hold what you have. And then just go do it. And if you don't make it, you don't make it. But if you do, you do. You won't have any regrets. Then you can quit. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, deal. So I ended up doing nationals. And this time I was even more neurotic, right? Get there like a week before, mapped out exactly how much time it took to get from the venue to where I was staying to the place. I stayed where the tanning was, made sure to look at sunrays. Everything just fell into place perfectly. And then ended up ultimately getting my pro card. But again, it was also one of those perfect, sweet moments where you don't think you're going to win. You won. And I'll just cap it at this. It's kind of like that second show I did where I had no clue I was in the top five, let alone the top two. I just didn't know how it worked. And nationals, I had a better idea. But the way they called it was I was in the first call immediately. And then they put me and this dude in the center. They made us do like three poses. And they go, you two step off, but don't go anywhere.
Yep.
So they already knew that we're top two right away, but don't go anywhere. So we go backstage and this dude starts cramping. And I'm like, dude, this dude's fucking cramping. And I'm like, I'm going to crush this dude. Like I've been posing with Kenny for like an hour and a half after leg day. You know what I mean? Like, we go back out, nail the posing perfectly, but he was thicker, bigger, more dense. I was taller, more streamlined, and better posing, better presentation. So we file off. And obviously the worst thing you can ever do is look at the comments on muscular development. Oh, dude, so win. I don't know why Chris should get third. Other people are like, no, Chris should win. Well, it's an X frame. It's apples and oranges. I'm going to turn the shit off.
Yeah.
Turn that off. Put that away. Focus. You know, Fokker's like, dude, let's fill you up more. Let's get you better. And then we'll come back. We come back. We do it. The judging was over at that point because Fokker told me that it was close. It was very close. So he goes, there's a chance they might rejudge it again, which they didn't. But I came back better. I rinsed all my tan off, got a brand new tan, and I got the tan applied like 30 minutes before stage time. So it looked good. We go back and then we're going through the routines, and then they go through 5, 4, 3, 2, and they get to the top two. You know, sometimes they say the winner is, or then sometimes they say second place is, right?
Yeah.
They go runner up is, or they say, and the winner is, how'd they say it? They worded it in a way where I thought I got second.
Oh.
And so I was clapping and I go to shake the guy's hand and he looks at me and goes, oh, no, bro, you won. And I was like, oh. So then I walked out and I was like, holy shit, because sometimes they call it second place, first place guy remains, or sometimes they just call it first place, right?
Yeah.
And that was like the bittersweet moment of all time. But that's the national saga. And even then I was going to quit. And then like a month later, Evan contacted me and he's like, dude, Universal asked me about you. They're interested in giving you sponsorship. Is that something that you would even be interested in? I'm like, I don't know, Evan. I'm like, I'm about to like be done bodybuilding, just move on to something else. He's like, I don't know, bro. You don't have to compete if you want to be sponsored by Universal. You just got to like look the part and kind of, why don't you just have the conversation with them to see what they want?
Yeah.
So I had a conversation with them. And they're just like, dude, we're really interested in your education. You're well-spoken, your look. We'd like to talk about supplements and, you know, education with nutrition. Is that something that you could do? I'm like, I could do that. And then, okay, then I'll continue to bodybuild for a little bit longer. And that's kind of how it ended up. You know, everything's been, it's one of those, you know, some of those people get into bodybuilding, and you guys are all coaches, you know this, where people are like, coach, how long before I can turn pro? Coach, when can I get a sponsorship?
I never wanted
to be pro. I never wanted to be sponsored. I never intended to have a coaching business. It just happened organically over time. It was just like, cool. You want a local show? Let's try pro qualifier. Oh, you placed pro qualifier? Let's try another pro qualifier. Okay, pro card. Great. Moving on. Oh, I get a sponsor? Okay, that's great. And people are like, hey, can you help me prep? I'll be like, dude, I don't know what I'm doing. But you can pay me $100 and I'll try to help you. And that's how it started. And then I helped them. And then he does better. And then his friend's like, what did you do? And he goes, like, oh, this guy at my gym helped me. And he's like, well, do you think you could put in a word for me? And then over years and years, it just built. And then it turned into what it is now. Like, everything happened organically. So it's love hard. That.
Same.
Dude, like when it happens organically, it's real and it's not going anywhere. And people tend to try to force it. And when you force it, you create pressure. You create pressure, you just reduce your quality of life and it's total shit. You know what I mean?
What do you think the percentage is? This is for all you guys. What do you think the percentage is of the giant sea of turds that is online trainers that those trainers came to training organically, that people sought them out versus the trainer, you know, marketing and going at? I say it's a really, really small percentage.
Especially now.
Yep. Yeah. Especially. Like 5 to 10 years ago, I'd say it'd be like 20%.
Yeah.
Now it's more like, I'd say now it's more like 10% that grew the business organically, walked the walk themselves. Like we got guys today that are coaching these massive teams that have done either one show or zero shows. And that just blows my mind because for me, experience is everything. Like, how are you going to tell someone to do 2 hours of cardio on next to no food if you don't know what that feels like?
How did you get people to come to you? Like, you had to go after them, but how did you convince them? How did you get them on the page to understand I can get you to where you want to go? It's just an odd, it's something that I struggle to comprehend.
It's actually easy to comprehend considering how many people got duped by Liver King.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. Yeah.
People actually like to be, they want to believe lies because it sounds easy.
Right. There you go.
A lie, I'm all for it. And you guys all know the stories of some top coaches being like, hey, I'll do free coaching. I'll give you free growth hormone, free drugs if you prep me. Because let's be honest, The how to fake a coach 101, and I'm not saying all top coaches do this, but like, or some have, is you get one or two good genetically gifted people.
Yeah.
And you do well with them and you hold them, project them, look what I did. But dude, you cut out grilled cheese 2 weeks out and you want a show. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't do much. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I worked with Gareth Bajo, his first show. I know what he took, nothing. And I know the adherence to his diet, nothing, like very poor. And he still won. But You know, and then obviously now he's got his shit together and some, and look how fast he is improving. But there are people like that, and a lot of coaches do that. I've had coaches try to poach some of my clients, and they're like, dude, I'll give you free growth hormone. I've had that one. Oh, I'll give you free coaching for an entire year, and I'll make sure that you're introduced to certain people so you could potentially get a sponsorship deal. Mm-hmm. It happens all the time. That's too grimy for me. And I tell them, I go flat out, bro, if you want to do that, you can do that. Like, I got no ill feelings. If you want to try to do to skip the process and you want to buy into some bullshit, go for it, man. But like, that's not me. I'm not a part of that world. I want nothing to do with that fake world. And
again, like, organic.
Yeah. And back to you guys saying about like people inquiring, like to get clients. I get a ton of nutrition consults from coaches that want to talk to me about how to establish coaching business, ins and outs of billing, et cetera. And they get a lot from what I have to say about like the mistakes I've made. But they always say, first question is, Chris, how do you get clients? Dude, I don't know. It's just happened all the time. I can tell you one thing. Don't go on your Instagram and be like, 5 spots left.
Yeah. They're all going to be
used up. That's the quickest way to show that you have desperation and you clearly have way more than 5 spots.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I've never had to do that my entire life, ever. Agreed. That's so weird.
Well, wouldn't you also say this, Chris? You didn't quit your day job until you were making a ton on the side from your coaching business on top of that and your sponsorship. And like, bodybuilding was over here, but you still had your day job that was paying the bills. And once it came to that point where, wait a minute, this chunk over here is getting bigger than my day job.
Yeah.
Now it's time to really focus on this.
Yeah, which was honestly, I'm sure all of us have been there. It's a little hard to walk away from. It's like job security, dental, health insurance.
Yeah. Kids, food on the table.
When I come home from work, I'm home from work. It's done.
Yeah.
Right.
So 2014, I decided like I was making 1.5 times the amount of money I'd make as a dietitian working full time as I was working like 15 hours a week, 20 hours a week as a coach.
Yeah.
So Lexi was like, you probably could just, you know, you could do this yourself. And I'm like, I don't know. I was scared.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then ultimately I'm like, maybe what I'll do is I'll just step down, do per diem and just be like work shifts. That way I'm still in the door.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then if something happened, because, you know, there's 7 dietitians, they all have sick days. They all take vacations. They need fill-ins. Mm-hmm. I can still be able to do that. I did that for a little bit. And then I realized coaching business kept accelerating to the point where I was like, oh my God, I'm working every second of my life. And I don't think I can quit. And then when I quit, you know, when you first quit, you're like super hungry. You're like, I can't fuck around. You know, morning coffee, emails, go, you know,
live on that computer. And that's the hard part too, is the balance. My wife came to me in 2012. She goes, all you do, like, we have a family, we have a lot of fun, and we don't have any time. All you're doing is living on the computer and then going to the gym to train. And I don't want to say it becomes addictive. And I'm sure that it can be for a lot of people, because the more you work, sometimes the more you make, and especially when you're in demand. But what happens is if you don't have, you have to find that balance. But the reason I say I don't think it's always an addiction to the money part of it, it's that fear of maybe it'll stop in a month, maybe it'll stop in 6 months. Once you build that ability to be able to go, okay, I can rely on this now. It's consistent. It's not this huge peak and valley. It's pretty stable throughout the year. Because if you're only doing competition, I know when I got into it early, I'd have huge months or a huge season, and then it would taper off after the summer, then it would jump up a little bit, and then when it got closer to the end of the year, it would start to jump real high. But I had these real big peaks and valleys. It takes a long time to get comfortable with, okay, this is going to work. I'd go low for 2 or 3 months, and I may not take on 10 clients. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have to go get a regular job. This is horrible. Just panicked.
Yeah.
You know, you throw kids into it and things like that, and you start to get old, and you go, I don't know. I feel like I'm a bouncer trying to make a career like Roadhouse out of being a bouncer at a bar. It doesn't, it's difficult to kind of grasp. It takes a long time to get comfortable. And once you do, then you kind of see, okay, now I can sit back a little bit and I can find that balance so that I can have a life outside of the business. But there's always that pull. There's always that constant, you know, I need to shift a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a great thing to touch on. Go ahead, Andrew. What are you going to say?
I was kind of going to echo, but I was just going to say there's so many times when me and we'd be at shows together, Chris, and we'd both look over and like you'd be on your computer while we're watching our athletes on stage, and I'd be on my computer. We'd have guys in the same class. Oh, our guys are out there now. Put the computer down for like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Okay, we're in the top five. We're good, you know. And then we'd get right back to doing our emails just because it was a 24/7 type thing during one stretch.
Insurance was the big one for me. That was the scary thing. Cause I was like, and when I quit my day job and I think the way we, at least the way I was raised was you get a good job, then you have good health care. And that's going to be just as important as the money you're making, you know, the blah, blah, blah. And then you realize, well, wait, you can afford to do this yourself. And when you're not working an hourly job, like you just, your ability, like you said, Skip, the longer you sit at your desk, the more you can make. So, but that was the scariest thing. I could relate to you, Chris, saying that those fears, man, that was the big one for me, though, was like, well, what about paying for my own health care and now paying for my wife's health care? And it's like, yeah, you just do it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, like we're all been through this. The balance thing took a very long time. Yeah. And honestly, like even now, like, do I have balance? I don't know. Right? Because we came from a time where we're probably working 70 hours a week and I might be working 50 hours a week, but do I technically have balance? I'm definitely not able to live life like many people where like people are like, oh, on the weekend, I'm going to sleep in on Saturday and then I think I'm going to go for a hike and then maybe go for the movies and dinner and then Sunday night drink and then Sunday sleep all day long. I'm like, I haven't done that since I was like 19 years old. Like, everything's time for, when you have your own business, it's like that. But, I was like that for a long time, but I kept looking at the books. My accountant's like, dude, you're making significantly increases every year. Mm-hmm. And this is 4 years in a row now. And I go, he goes, dude, you can chill out. Mm-hmm. And I understand what you're saying because I was working so much. And I'm like, you're right. And he goes, if you continue to do what you're doing and you provide the same service, you don't change anything.
Yeah.
This trajectory is not going to stop.
Right.
So he goes, at this point, just put a cap, as in like you look at your monthly income and you're stable and you have X amount of clients, great, keep it. But if five fall off, maybe pick up two or three more. Hmm. But like that's how you do it. He goes, you don't need to keep trying to climb and climb and climb and then work 13, 14 hour days. You don't need to do that. He goes, your reputation's not going anywhere. So I kept saying that to myself to break that paranoia of having to go back to the hospital is, if I continue to do what I've always done, I'm going to get what I've always got. I'm not going to change it. I'm not going to change my response time. I'm not going to change my clientele, et cetera. And that ended up working. But the money aspect is interesting too. And we all have to touch on that is, you know, you start making really good money. But the bottom line is, I was telling my wife, actually like 2 years ago, and I go, you know, remember when we said to ourselves, oh, it'd be so great if we make this amount of money each year. Mm-hmm. It's going to be amazing. And then we're there. I don't feel any different.
No. Yeah.
Right. I'm not like, dude, worse. Happy. I'm like, actually, I think I'm actually more unhappy.
Yeah.
I don't have time. I want time to do things. And I'm starting to long for like, my buddy wants to go do something on the weekend, go mountain biking, or like, dude, I want to do that too. You know what I mean? Like,
I think that's an age thing though, too. And I'd ask you guys if you feel the same way. As I started to get into my 40s and the kids started to get into their teenage years and things, I started to see and understand that very cliche time is money statement, because I order groceries because I'm lazy. I can look down and I can see the store down there, but I look at it as I have the money and I would rather pay the money than to take the time and the stress of elbow to elbow with people to get my groceries. So I'm focused so much more as I get older on the time component. I, even if I'm sitting dead on my ass watching a movie with my wife, that's still time that I consider valuable, that if I can pay someone else to work on my car or do those things that I don't want to fuck with. 100%. I find that time is so much more valuable versus when I was younger, because when I was younger, I thought I had plenty of it.
Yeah.
You guys notice that as you get older, I would assume.
Absolutely.
Juju taught me how to not be so cheap. When Juju stayed with me, he was like, dude, you go grocery shopping? And I go, yeah. And he goes, dude. And he calculates like, he goes, where's your grocery store? And I'm like, oh, it's about 20 minutes away. He goes, how many times do you go to the store a week? I go, twice. He goes, okay. So that's 40, it's 160 minutes you're spending driving. How long are you grocery shopping for? And then he calculates the time. He goes, this is how much you're spending per week, per month, per year. He goes, you're going to spend an extra, what, 20, 30 bucks having somebody deliver it for you, and you save all that time to do other things.
Exactly.
And then that's that point, like, I outsource everything. I'm like, guys mow the lawn? Great. Mow the lawn. You're going to put those pallets in there? I'll pay you to put the pallets in there. You know, that way I have more time to do other stuff.
I deal with a couple friends who think I'm pretentious or I don't give a shit. I'm like, it's just time. I just don't care.
I'm with you 100%. I want more time, especially now, like, you know, with the whole business. I will tell you one thing. I got banned from Instagram for impersonating myself, apparently.
What?
And it looked like I was permanently kicked off. So I got paranoid. This was 2 years ago now. When I just got to Texas 3 years ago. And I was trying to do everything I could get it back. Talked to a lot of my dorky IT friends. He's like, dude, it looks like you really got banned. Like you might not get your account back. And I'm like, oh my God, like I'm going to lose business. I didn't lose a cent of business. My rate was 3 months and my income didn't change. Inquiries didn't change. Nothing changed. So it goes to show how much Instagram was actually helping me. It wasn't.
That's wild. And I'm sure it was reassuring too to know that, you know?
Yeah. And then I was like, I was paranoid at first. And then I was like, it's not changing. And then I'm like, I felt a calm over me. I don't have to look at Instagram.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
It's like, wow, this is amazing. I can like go outside, not bring my phone, and then just go do whatever.
We had a bunch of listener questions. We won't have time for them. I don't even think we needed them anyway. This is such an awesome conversation. But before we went, though, we did want to talk to you a little bit about like life after bodybuilding. And I feel like we're already kind of talking about that now, finding more time to do the things that you enjoy. But I'd be curious to hear just the question of my own is, how did you deal with the idea of stepping away from looking like a bodybuilder, being the biggest guy in the room? Because I think that as a coach, part of what we do is the look we carry is our advertisement. You know what I mean? Being that guy, I think, is part of the advertisement as being a coach. Was that a struggle for you to step away from, to an extent, sizing down? I mean, you're not a small guy now by any means, but stepping away from that and moving into the next phases of life, how have you dealt with that?
Yeah, I'll break that down into kind of a short sequence. The idea of retiring was much more desirable than the actuality of, right? Mm-hmm. When you first like, oh, I'm going to be done. Sweet. No more drugs. I don't have to eat all this food. This is amazing. And then, you know, reality starts to set in. People would be like, oh, dude, you okay? You lost a lot of weight. because that becomes your identity, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I never had a problem being smaller. I never bodybuilded for anybody but myself. Like Andrew and I, all of us actually started bodybuilding before social media. So we were doing it really for us. We weren't doing it for Instagram. So it's probably easier for us to transition than, say, current day and age people. But I've always been very hyper-focused on one thing. I raced motocross and I was obsessed. Then I went from motocross right to bodybuilding. Leaving bodybuilding, I really didn't have an obsession to jump onto, which at time was a little concerning for myself. So I just kind of said to myself, I got to try new things to try to find something fun to do. And I tried boxing right away. And I liked boxing. It just didn't capture that same passion, right? It was fun, but it just didn't drive me the same way. And honestly, it was difficult, but it wasn't. It was more difficult in the sense for me because I had nothing to strive for. All of us are competitors, right? Yeah. Understand competitive mindset. I don't have children. I went my whole life shooting to be better or the best I could be at something. Now knowing I'm 37 years old at the age where I'm past my physical performance peak. I'm not going to ever exceed it. I can't pick up something else and be like, I'm going to reach my potential. No, I can't. I'm old, right? So knowing that age, knowing that my body's not going to be able to do the same things it could recover if I try to do any other sport was very difficult to accept. I still have trouble accepting it. And then did the boxing, downsized. It was a little weird. It didn't bother me so much in regards to downsizing for the sense of like a billboard. It was more or less people's comments. It's like, dude, I'm not bodybuilding anymore. I'm not going to stay freaking huge, you know, because people at the gym looked at me like there's something wrong.
Yeah.
I just don't want to be big anymore. You have to explain it to 101 people, you know?
Yeah.
So from boxing, you know, it was up and down and then try to weight train a little bit because you still want to look good. You don't want to be like just a dad bod floating around boxing when you used to be. So then I would start to lift a little bit, lift 3 days a week and box and mountain bike, try to do a little bit of everything. Still struggling to find that like same happiness and passion that I had with those two, because me personally, I need that. I've always had that my entire life. Mm-hmm. So I ended up getting real crazy shape for my 40th birthday, just to say that I did it, build the posing module. And that was fun getting in shape. But I just started to realize that like, maybe I should compete one more time. But my body, I got too many restrictions with training to be able to optimally train properly to be the best I can be. And to go back on stage with all these ailments all the time with elbows and knees, I'm like, dude, what am I doing? I'm not going to do it. So I decided not to compete. I was actually going to compete this fall. And I decided not to based on my how I felt heading out of my cut for my 40th birthday. So this is a really good story. And then we'll come end there. We'll do some questions. One of my neighbors, she rides street bikes. She came with a street bike one day. And she's like, Chris, you used to do stunts. I used to do stunts on street bikes when I was young, young.
Oh, no kidding.
You should get a bike. And I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm too old for that. I'm going to fall. I'm going to die. I can't be 100 mile per hour wheelies anymore on the highway. Like, I was 19. I can't do that. And she's like, oh, you never know. So a week later after that, she comes over the dirt bike. She bought a little play bike, KLX 140. And I'm like, let me see that thing. I get on that bike and I start ripping around the neighborhood. I'm like, I go, this is fun. I go, I haven't been on a bike in over 21 years. I go, this is amazing. Maybe I'll get a small bike just to toy around with. I could ride with you. Went out like a week later, bought that same bike, got some gear, and her and I are ripping around the neighborhood in the woods going at night. I had night vision on, ripping through the woods.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, I'm like, this is a blast. I'm like, this is so much fun. But my competitive mentality or just me racing motocross professionally, I'm like, I'm on a play bike. And I'm like, this bike's just not doing it for me.
Yeah.
And we ended up going to like this like track through the woods in my house, and I'm like riding it around. I'm like, start putting on modifications to this bike.
Right.
Still not out. And then I'm like, you know what? I go, Nicole, I think I'm going to buy a big bike. And she's like, you totally should. I brought her, and my wife's cool and supportive, whatever makes me happy. So I brought her down to the KTM dealer. And like, now that you're a kid with adult money, I was like, I'm going to buy the most obnoxious, expensive dirt bike of all time.
Yeah.
So I ended up buying a brand new KTM 350 XCF factory edition. And at the time, I had no business buying a bike like that powerful. And so, especially having ridden for so long. But I get the gear, and now I'm 40 hours riding back, and I'm like going to motocross tracks twice a week. Now I'm cutting weight down. I'm doing old motocross drills, and I'm like riding with her constantly, buying all this new gear. I'm about to buy a second dirt bike in a week and at the end of this month. And like now I'm like, I feel like fulfilled again. I go, I'm having so much damn fun. Like
that's when
I
cool, say man. Fun,
you know, you guys, you know the aspects of your life where you're doing a hobby and you're thinking about nothing but that hobby when you're doing it for hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, there's this huge block of time that goes by, and all of a sudden your wife's like, get in here. You got to do this. Oh shit. I had no idea what time it was. Oh crap.
Yeah.
And then I'm like that twice per week. It's like I ride all the entire day. And all of a sudden reality hits me and I check my phone and be like 71 messages. I'm like, shit. You
know? Yeah.
I got to go back to work.
Ugh. Back to reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then back to reality. So now I'm riding. I took a real bad spill this last Sunday and I'm muscle relaxers and stuff now, but I'm keeping myself grounded. I see older guys at the track and I always talk to them. I go, dude, how do your body feel? They're like, my body feels fine, but I got to keep myself grounded. I'm not 20 years old anymore. I'm like, I got to get that mentality a little bit more of that.
Yeah.
But ultimately, my dad is actually the one that helped pull the trigger on this fully. Is I said to him, I go, Dad, how bad of an idea is it for me to start riding dirt bikes again? And he had the best answer ever. He's a doctor. It's not like my dad condones dangerous sports, but he says to me, you love dirt bikes more than anybody I've ever known. You've raced the majority of your life. He goes, you're 40 years old. There might be a time in your life where you're not going to be physically able to ride a motorcycle ever again. Mm. He goes, you need to go out and you need to buy a dirt bike as soon as you can and have as much fun as much as you can while you can. Because everything that you have now, I know you're worried about getting hurt. He goes, but you might get in a car accident a month from now. Yep. When you're 50 years old, you might have full knee replacements and not be able to ride a dirt bike at all. So he goes, go riding. And I'm like, well, shit, Dad, never heard support like that from you before.
No rigor.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's the progression. So now I haven't been boxing. I still weight train 3 days a week. I've got to keep a little bit of that bodybuilding training in there, but I do a ton of like athletic stuff, you know?
That's cool. That's good shit. Yeah, it is. Well, listen, let's wrap this thing up here. I don't think we could get any better than this. We appreciate your time, man. And I know you've got your own podcast. If people want to check that out, how do they find that?
It's IFBB AMA. You can find the Instagram page and follow the links through there. All right. It's me and Milos. We have everybody on there. We talk about everything. But it's a good podcast. We don't censor anything. So we're kind of on live stream off the website. So we don't have to use YouTube.
Yes.
Yeah. IFBB AMA. I like that.
It started with like Ask Me Anything. And then we did some Q&As. And we're like, then the AMAs end up turning into like interviews. So we're like, it's an interview. It's an interview. Let's be honest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. And guys, of course, go to bodybrady.com. You can reach out to Andrew there. You can go to teamskip.com. Reach out to Skip over there. McNallyDiets@gmail.com. Reach out to myself there. And Chris, what's the best way to reach out to you for coaching?
For coaching, is to go through my website. DMs, as you guys, we all get too many DMs a day. I can't keep track of them. Best to go to my website, totalnutrition.com. If you're interested in the product that I developed, it's behind me, drinkmore.com. It's basically a water enhancer with a mineral component. But I think it tastes better and it's got a little bit of minerals in it. So it helps hydration, but not to the point where you're going to overconsume it and become fat fingered water buffalo, you know?
Nice. Guys, we appreciate everybody tuning in. And once again, check out truenutrition.com. Use our code THINK over there. Supplementsource.ca for Canadians. And of course, thank you to all of our Patreon people. We'll be doing a Q&A next episode and we'll be tackling all your questions, guys, for another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear. We will see you soon. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Awesome. Thank you.